From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number you'll call, 1-800-462-7413. And of course, Zorba, as always, some interesting topics to talk about.
Right. Almond butter versus peanut butter. Is one healthier than the other? And is one better for you in terms of your cardiovascular health?
And
we're going to talk about the Chobani issues, the recall of the yogurt, the mold. We're going to talk about food safety, what it means for you today and what it means for your family tomorrow.
What's our recipe?
Tomato pie. I know, Tom, you love pie, pie, pie. Every time I say pie, you smile.
Everyone loves pie.
Everyone loves pie. This is tomato pie. So it's not a sweet pie. It's a savory pie. It's delicious. It's wonderful this time of year. I know how much you love tomatoes. I love tomatoes. America loves tomatoes. This is a tomato pie recipe.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. And Zorba, a listener with us now in Pulaski, Wisconsin. Hi.
Good day to you. How are you doing, gentlemen?
Fine. How can we help?
Well, my sisters and I were having dinner together one night, and our husbands had stepped away, and they started sneezing, and they had three very distinctive sneezes. One sounded like the train that could, you know, achoo, choo, choo. Another one sounded like, you know, there were a flock of geese going across.
Wait a minute. How does that sound? How does that sound?
Oh, gosh. It was, you know, just sort of a meh. When he sneezes.
Okay.
And then my husband sneezed, and it was so loud that people in three restaurants down were saying, God bless you.
So one great big loud sneeze, right?
And it's huge. It's like, you know, he could take buildings down. And I sat there and I thought about it and I thought, my goodness, is he doing something, you know, that he could rupture some high vessels or, and he says it's the same as his grandfather's.
Oh.
And my question is there anything we can do to, I don't mind the train, I don't mind the duck, but the building blasting gets a little tough.
Yeah. Well, before,
is there anything you can do to control that?
Yeah, before Zorba answers, do you have one of those typical lady sneezes, like,
well, I have a much more delicate sneeze.
Yeah,
let's put it
yeah
that
like
way.
I said.
Wait a second. Wait a second.
It expresses what I need to do, but I don't take down houses.
Lady sneezes. Are you picturing a little hanky, like those little doily
hankies?
Well,
that's a suppressed sneeze.
Like that?
That's a delicate dainty, as she said. Yeah.
Actually, but Penny does that. When she sneezes, she holds her nose, and it's a really tiny little sneeze, and I'll go, and I'll say, you're going to blow your brains out because you're holding your sneeze in, which, of course, is obviously not the case. So you'd like your husband to sneeze a little bit less vibrant so that the walls of the restaurant do not go down.
Mm-hmm. That is very true. You know, so he doesn't scare the devil out of my grandson.
I love it. I have a question, though. First of all, the ladies got together afterwards in the restaurant, and the men walked out separately, and the men were all sneezing. Why did that happen?
We were in a very high, spicy food restaurant, and they just all happened to be attacked.
They were all attacked.
We just thought it was very funny.
Yeah. All attacked by the pepper. Well, I've got some advice for you, and it's two words, and the words are good luck. Those are the two words.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You know, these are habits, and they're habits that are ingrained really pretty much from birth, you know, not exactly from birth, but we learn them at a young age of how to sneeze. And we tend to follow the parental model, you know, the mother or the father of how they sneeze. And Tom is right. Women tend to have sort of more delicate sneezes on the whole, and men have, you know, big, husky man sneezes in our society. And it's purely a society issue because the sneeze is something we can't control, but we do control how it vibrates, and it just is a habit. Now, I don't know of a psychologist that engages in sneeze-changing behavior, but I am sure that somewhere in California there is a psychologist that undoubtedly does this.
Are you saying I should go on vacation in California with my husband.
You've got it. And we just look up on the net, sleep changing behavior psychologist. I'm sure that for a couple of $1,000, somebody will change that behavior. But short of that, I don't think you're going to do much. So,
okay. Well, I guess I'll just have to live with it.
I think that's exactly it. But very interesting. And I think you've tickled a lot of people with your comments. You like that, Tom?
Yeah.
You like that, Tom? So.
Well, as they always say, God bless you.
Gesundheit to you,
Thanks
too.
Thanks so much for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Don't you, when you sneeze, Zorba, almost intentionally do a whole loud sneeze? For me, it feels like I really want to do it. It makes me feel better.
I try to sneeze as a man.
Yeah.
I try to sneeze as loud as I can.
Me too.
And I'm a small guy. So as a small guy, I can finally assert myself with a really loud sneeze so that everyone turns their head towards me and says, who is that man sneezing? That's exactly
it. He must be a real man.
Must be a real man. Listen to that sneeze.
800-462-7413 is our toll free number, 1-800-462-7413. To a listener now, Zorba, in Buffalo, New York. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
I had a question for Dr. Zorba. Mm-hmm. I sort of just wanted to get his general opinion on the nutritional value of hemp seeds, and also more specifically how digestible they are. Because I know some seeds harder for your body to digest, and sometimes your body will choose to not digest them, and you don't get the best nutritional value out of them. How should I eat hemp seeds? What's the best way to eat them?
Why do you eat hemp seeds?
Because I had read that they are a superfood. They're one of the most nutritional foods or nutritional seeds there are.
You know, it's interesting how seeds and nuts, and we label some things as superfoods and then some things as food. And I think it comes from the idea that we have wasted calories, which is true. You know, you look at high fructose corn syrup and you look at all the sugar that's around and you say, well, this is only caloric and doesn't have any vitamins, any minerals, any proteins, any good oil. And hemp seeds really just, they fall into the seed category of being a food that has the proper fat in them, because the seed itself has some fat, has a lot of fiber in them, as do all seeds, because seeds are fibrous, because we have to get them, you know, Mother Nature wants to get them into the ground and wants to make sure that it's protected, so that when the seed begins to take in water, it has enough nutrition to actually hit its sprout. And it's got antioxidants, as do other seeds. Now, whether or not it is truly superior to other seeds that you may be eating, if we look at what other seeds that are around, we'll say like sunflower seeds, I think sometimes that's a matter of marketing. You'll get more for hemp seeds in a natural food store than you will for sunflower seeds. Sunflower seeds are cheap. They're inexpensive. You can buy them at the dollar store. But hemp seeds, you're going to have to buy them at the $5 store or the $10 store. So I think right now hemp seeds are hot in terms of how the sales are. And like all things, they're going to hit a bell-shaped curve and then they're going to go down. I don't think I would label them as a superfood, so I would take away from that. But I think they're a very good food. Now, how much you should eat. If you look at seeds and you look at nuts, and I like to think of them really together because they really are together in that they have many of the same nutritional things. Mm-hmm. A handful of seeds a couple of times a day, you know, just take a handful of seeds, is going to be about 200 calories, a couple calories, between 150 and 250, depending on how big your hands are. Mm-hmm. And they're a good source of protein, vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, and oil. And more importantly, they tend to attenuate appetite. So I think what seeds and nuts do is they keep you from being hungry to eat the junk food. And I think that's where a lot of their benefit comes from. So does that help you?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. So I have one question for you. Where do you get your hemp seeds?
At the natural food store in my neighborhood.
Uh-huh. How do you like the taste of them?
I think they're delicious.
Yeah,
I think they're much tastier than flaxseed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, flaxseed is pretty bland. I mean, it's very bland. Yeah, I think they are a tastier seed. And I think one of the things that we have to do is we ought to think about seeds and nuts and go outside our box and try different seeds. So if you like seeds such as sunflower seeds, I think a lot of our listeners may like to try hemp seeds. So I think it's a great idea. Keep eating seeds. That's going to be the new slogan this year.
Okay.
Thanks for your call.
All right. Thank you.
800-462-7413. And Zorba, while we're talking about comparative nutrition and what's better than other things, you mentioned a study on almond butter versus peanut butter.
Right, and there are differences. Almond butter is a butter that's been around for a long time, but almonds are just getting more and more play as something that may be more nutritious. Now, peanut butter is an excellent source of protein. It's an excellent source of fat and oil. It has different oil to it. The problem is, of course, it's a high caloric item, and the same with almond
butter. Before we get to the actual comparisons, when we're talking about these, it's almost apples, oranges. Everybody has eaten peanut butter for years and years and years. Not that many people, I think, eat almond butter.
Oh, absolutely. I think it is. It's just like trying a different food. It has a totally different taste, just like almonds and peanuts have completely different tastes.
I've never had almond butter.
Have you ever had almonds?
Yeah, sure, of course.
So the butter has a different taste and a different texture. You have to try. You know, Tom? This is ideal for you because you don't have to cook then. Yep. You don't have to get out the pots and pans, cook, clean up the kitchen. You just have to buy a jar of it.
Of almond butter?
Yeah, you could do that.
And spread it on a piece of white bread?
Yeah, a piece of white bread and eat it with bananas. Well, looking at the difference again. So from a caloric point of view, they're about exactly the same. Roughly a tablespoonful is 100 calories. Mm-hmm. And by the way, a tablespoonful of oil is 100 calories. And so you can see where most of this really comes from the oil.
Yeah.
Versus the carbohydrate. There's not a lot of carbohydrate in. There's a little bit of fiber, but not very much. But there is a difference in the fat. And almond butter is rich in monounsaturated fats. So it's richer in monounsaturated fats than peanut butter, which is better. And so there's some studies have shown that monounsaturated fats are better for your heart. They may reduce cholesterol slightly, but they definitely appear to be healthy. So I think they have an advantage over peanut butter with that. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of studies that showed that it may reduce blood pressure. Now, the blood pressure reduction may be due to the fact that peanut butter is usually salted. The most peanut butter that people buy has salt placed in it. We know that elevates blood pressure. And people who buy almond butter often buy it unsalted. So that might be the issue because it has a different taste to it, and people who buy almond butter are usually more interested in low salt products. Mm-hmm. Like all oils and peanuts, even peanut butter, almond butter may control your blood sugar a little bit better, and it's got more antioxidants than peanuts do. So I think on the whole, if you want to try something different, and just like we just talked about seeds and hemp seeds, I think I would think about trying almond butter. I've had it. It's a wonderful taste.
And it seems from your comparison there that almond butter may be a little healthier.
I think it's healthier. I think it's healthier than peanut butter. And once again, it's not that you're going to substitute almond butter for peanut butter in your diet. It's that if you're a nut and a butter and a seed person, you may decide this is something to expand your diet. Mm-hmm. And once again, like all times, it's moderation. But the more foods you eat of a different variety, the more likely you are to get the micronutrients that you need to live to be 120, which I know is Tom's goal.
Make an A and J sandwich.
An A and J sandwich. I love it. I love it. That's exactly it. Perfect.
1-800-462-7413. It's toll free, of course. 800-462-7413. Eau Claire, Wisconsin with us now. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
I have a question for you. I smoked for about 25 years, and about 2 years ago, I decided I was going to quit smoking and quit drinking and get healthy. I started exercising, working out a little bit, and I started racing bikes, and I'm wondering if that 25 years of smoking and drinking alcohol, if I'll ever be able to compete with people in their mid to late 40s that haven't done that.
Well, first of all, let's talk about what 25 years of smoking does. Mm-hmm. Some of your lung damage – well, you smoked for how many years? You quit 25 years ago. You smoked for
– No, I smoked for about 25 years. I quit 2 years ago.
2 years ago. So first of all, some of your lungs are gone. Some of it you have irreparable damage. There's no doubt about it. If you look at an 18-year-old healthy person, the surface area of their lungs is the surface area of a 9 by 12 rug. In other words, it's a huge surface area. Mm. And when you smoke, what happens is you destroy the honeycomb that looks just like a hive within there. You destroy some of that, and there's a natural attrition of the lung where we don't have the same aerobic capacity and potential at 18 that we do at 50. And when you smoke, that attrition or that destruction of lung occurs, and you'll never get it back. So you compared to you, in other words, if we compared you to you as somebody who right. smoked 25 years, you would definitely have had more lung capacity than you have now. You can't get it back. It's never going to happen. Now, what do you get back? Well, first of all, you stop losing lung capacity as quickly the day you stop smoking. You begin to get benefit there. The mucus that's in the lungs that is generally produced, the irritation from the smoke, stops happening. That gives you better diffusion of oxygen because there's less mucus, and over time that improves. That improves over about a 2 to 5 year period. So you're still going to get some improvement over the next couple of years over that. And then how fit you are is a very interesting thing. I'm going to be spending some time in Nepal and Tibet. I'm going to be at 14 to 16,000 feet. So every single day, I'm hitting the treadmill or the elliptical for 30 minutes. I have a far better lung capacity now doing this than I did probably 10 years ago or 15 years ago because I'm allergic to exercise. I have to force myself to do it. But when I know I'm going to be on the mountains, the fear of not being able to go up the hill motivates me to go in every single day and do it. Mm-hmm. So I'm much healthier than I was aerobically, as I said, 10 years ago. So you're going to be healthier than you were, and you might beat the guys that are younger than you because you have more exercise potential and your muscles are better, but you're never going to get some of that lung capacity back.
Okay.
But how do you do on the bike? How do you do with exercise?
How do I finish in the races?
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm in the last quarter of racers. Uh-huh. I'm usually beaten, you know, 5, 10, yeah. 15 people.
Okay.
I'm finishing. It's uh-huh. off-road racing, so I'm finishing in one piece, and that's what makes me the most happy.
Oh, yeah.
I finish the race without a broken arm or something.
So how many times have you been – you've been racing for how long?
Just this – I started racing this spring.
How do you compare to the beginning to the end?
I'm more fit now. I know that I'm more fit than when I started.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay.
My times are better.
So you're more fit and your times are better. Mm-hmm. So in
right.
other words, what you're doing is you're improving those things you can do at your age. You're improving your aerobic capacity and your muscular strength. That's what
right.
you're doing.
And right.
and ultimately, when your aerobic capacity and muscular strength are better, your lungs are going to function as high a capacity as they can. And I predict over the next year or two, if you keep it up, you'll do better next year and the year after than you're even doing now. And you'll
right.
start to go from the last quarter to the third quarter.
That's kind of what the question was. Am I wasting my time trying to get better, or am I just out there doing it?
Oh, no. You are not wasting your time trying to get better. You're going to get benefit from this. There's no doubt about it. You're definitely going to get benefit, so I would definitely keep it up. And congratulations on quitting smoking. It's a tough row to hoe.
Way to go.
Great. Hey, thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate
Take care.
The call. We've talked about this before, smoking, giving up smoking, and how the thought lingers. We're thinking about putting a deck on,
uh-huh. okay.
talking about it,
yeah.
and my wife just yesterday showed me pictures of possible decks, mm-hmm. and I looked at them, and what do you suppose was in my mind as I looked at that?
Sitting on the deck and having a pipe full of tobacco.
Smoking my pipe.
Yes.
I haven't smoked
right.
in 8 or 9
that's
years.
That's right. Sitting on the deck, looking out on the deck with your pipe. The memory trace is there, isn't it? The pipe, I can just picture. I got it.
Before we take a short break now, Zorba, time for you to grab your gavel for another case of Judge Zorba. Today's case comes to us from Elena in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, who's having some trouble looking on the sunny side, shall we say. She writes, "Hi, Zorba and Tom. My younger brother is 23, and he is a serious runner. He told me that especially when he's in training for a marathon, he's been eating a lot of eggs, 12 to 18 per week. I think that is too much and that he should substitute some of the eggs for other proteins because of their cholesterol and saturated fat content. So, Judge Zorba, what is the upper limit of whole eggs that are healthy for an active young guy to eat in an average week? Please settle this so my brother will know that he should always listen to his big sister's advice.
To his big sister's advice. That is a ton of eggs, and that is way too much. And I've got some egg suggestions, but way too much. So what is it? Well, there are some people whose cholesterol is super high, and they shouldn't have any eggs. And for other people, having two eggs a couple of times a week are fine. But the number of eggs that he's having is quite high. So here's a recommendation. Mm-hmm. Egg white, which is protein, does not have any cholesterol. The cholesterol is all in the yolk. So if you want to make yourself a three-egg omelet, do it, but use one yolk and use three egg whites. And that's an ideal way of doing it. And that's the way a lot of people do that more and more. I've had egg salad now, which mm-hmm. is egg white salad. I happen to love egg salad. It was delicious. I mean, it was really, really good. So what you do is you reduce the number of yolks, keep up the protein, and the protein is what he really needs for his energy as he's racing, and that's a compromise.
And Big Sister can say, I was right.
I was right. Go, Big Sister.
What about, Zorba, the study that recently came out comparing the effects of egg yolks to smoking?
I think it's just the anti-egg yolk lobby that's just producing studies like that. I don't think you can quantitate egg yolks in smoking. No, not at all.
Have a case or shell you'd like Zorba to crack? Add it to the docket by sending your email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have our recipe coming up. You'll maybe love it. We'll find out. More of your calls, of course, some interesting research to talk over, and, of course, our medical myth buster. Lots of great reasons for you to stay with us right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI Public Radio International. Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 800-462-7413. Callers are waiting, but we have a line open for you at 1-800-462-7413. Now though, Zorba, before our next call, recipe time, this one for tomato pie.
That's right, tomato pie. Now, do you like pie? We call it pie.
Everybody likes pie.
Blueberry pie?
Yeah, sure, of
strawberry pie? Yeah. Rhubarb pie?
Cherry's the best, of course.
Cherry is not the best at all.
Oh, yeah, with vanilla ice cream.
I like rhubarb.
No. Rhubarb is not too tangy
rhubarb.
And not sweet
I
enough.
Love it. Rhubarb in season is so good. How about apple pie? Really good
apple pie with ice cream, really good crust.
How about apple pie with hot cheddar cheese?
Yeah, that's good, too.
It is good. You know, my cousins in California cannot imagine you put cheese on pie. They've never tasted it. It is awesome.
Well, luckily, our recipe time is gone, so talking about other kinds of pies.
So the phone number.
Oh, okay.
But this is a savory pie. See, there are sweet pies. How about shepherd's pie? Do you like
shepherd's pie?
I
do actually like shepherd's
pie. That's a savory pie. In other words, that's a pie that is not sweet.
These are
much more common in England where they eat savory pies and savory pies are actually very common in lots of parts. So this is sort of a savory pie in that it is not sweet,
right?
And it uses tomatoes. Now, I must admit, when somebody first told me about tomato pie, I thought, yuck, who wants tomato pie? But tomato pie is actually really, really good if you love tomatoes. Now, do you love tomatoes?
No, I like tomatoes.
Oh, I love tomatoes. I love all different kinds of tomatoes. Okay, so for those of you who love tomatoes, this is tomato pie. Mm-hmm. So I start out with a pie crust, 9 inches, and I buy a pre-made pie crust in the refrigerator case. I do not use the pie crust that are frozen because I don't think they're very tasty. So I buy the ones you sort of lay out. I think they're really good. And if you want to make your own pie crust, do it. But I have failed numerous times in making a pie crust. So I've given it up and I just buy them pre-made.
Okay, one pie crust.
That's right. 6 large tomatoes. What you want to do is they want to be ripe. You want to peel them, drain them. Okay, peel them and drain them.
6 large tomatoes, ripe, peeled, and drained.
That's right. And you're going to cut them into thick slices. Mm-hmm. So you're going to cut them. Now, I was interesting. I was speaking to one of my patients in the office who's French, and she peels her tomatoes before she puts them in a salad. And she said all the French peel their tomatoes. They do not eat tomatoes with the peel on.
Isn't that hard? Wouldn't that be hard?
Well, that's what I thought. I thought it would be hard. And I peel tomatoes by throwing them in hot water when I've canned tomatoes. But I went home last night, because this happened yesterday, last night, and I peeled a tomato. And you know what? It's not hard at all. Actually pretty easy. Yeah.
It doesn't all fall apart.
No. It doesn't. That's my image, that all of a sudden it'll go, it'll fall apart, but it doesn't. So you got to peel. Generally, if you peel the tomato, it tastes better. Peel the tomato.
Okay.
Okay, four scallions.
Four scallions.
One small red onion diced.
One small red onion diced.
And, of course, the scallions you're going to slice up into little pieces. Mm-hmm. Four tablespoonfuls of fresh basil chopped up.
Mm-hmm. Four big tea basil, fresh and chopped.
Two tablespoonfuls of parsley chopped up.
Two big tea parsley chopped.
Half cup of plain reduced fat or no fat yogurt.
Half a cup of yogurt, plain and reduced fat.
That's right. And half a cup of reduced fat mayonnaise.
Half a cup of reduced fat mayonnaise.
Now, the key here is that if you look at different recipes for tomato pie, they often just use pure mayonnaise. And mayonnaise, of course, is a high fat product. So
right.
That's one of the things that we're doing here. So preheat the pie crust for 10 minutes, then set it aside. Peel the tomatoes carefully, cut into thick slices, then salt them and set them in a colander to let them drain for a few minutes. There'll be a little drainage that will occur. Then lay the tomato slices in the pie shell. Sprinkle with a little bit salt, but lots of pepper if you like pepper.
Yeah.
Then add the scallions, red onion, parsley, and basil. That's what you do. Scallions, red onion, parsley, and basil. Then mix the mayo and yogurt together. Spread them over the tomatoes. Mm-hmm. Bake for 20 or 30 minutes until the top is lightly browned and bubbly, and enjoy it.
This would be good.
You've
tasting
changed
it
your
now.
Mind.
Yeah, I have.
You've changed your mind.
The key, though, I would bet you anything to this, is getting really good
tomatoes. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. If you do this as a winter dish, you are silly.
Yeah.
This is a summer dish with wonderful tomatoes. And heirloom tomatoes, on the whole, are going to taste really, really good. You want to have really, really good tomatoes for this. And, so you're going to try it. You're going to go home and make it?
Well, good one.
Good one. Good one. So if you want a copy of today's recipe,
yes,
come to our website at zorbapastor.org, and you can get today's recipe. Plus, you can search our archives for all the wonderful Zorba Pastor On Your Health recipes. That's zorbapastor.org. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook.
+1 800 462 7413 is our toll-free number. Back to the phones we go now, Zorba, welcoming a listener in Port Washington, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Zorba.
How can we help?
I'm looking for your help to settle a long debate between myself and my wife.
Mm-hmm.
And
let me jump in.
Yes.
Your wife is right.
Well, she's going to like that. Tom, I'm not listening to you. Okay.
Okay, go ahead anyway.
You know, Tom, in his spare time, is a family therapist.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes. The question is using ghee, G-H-E-E, as in clarified butter, in cooking, healthier than using butter?
So,
well, first of all, Zorba, what
Tom
is ghee?
Tom does not know.
I
what
have
ghee
no idea.
Ghee is clarified butter, and you either purchase it in the store. It's used in Indian cooking.
What does clarified mean?
Well, it's butter where there's some of the butter solids that are taken off. If you take the butter and you boil it, basically, you put it in heat and you heat it up so that it's bubbled to the surface, and you take the bubbles off the top. That is clarified butter.
Okay,
that's how you make ghee. So your wife thinks ghee is healthier than regular butter.
No, I do.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
I've got to know which side of the argument.
I needed to know that because I'll be in trouble if I make a mistake.
Well, I don't think there's much of a difference between ghee,
like I said,
clarified butter, and butter. So you are in hot water. What happens is you're taking out some of what are called the milk solids, which are proteins. But from a fat point of view, it's pretty much the same thing. It's the same. amount of oil. It might taste better. It might look better. You might like it better. But the fact is, oil is oil is oil. So how are you going to present this information to your wife? Or are you going to present this information to your wife?
Well, she put up with me for 32 years. I think she can put up with me for more time.
For a bit more time. But there's no significant difference from the oil point of view.
Sorry.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your help, and I appreciate your feedback.
And good luck. Good luck on delivering this information to she who must be obeyed.
I'm sure she's listening.
I'm sure she is.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. Before we take another short break, Zorba, I think it's time that we try and stump the doc. Our challenger today is Julie, who is having a difficult time nailing down the answer to a troubling situation. Julie writes, "My 3-year-old son has been diagnosed with hand-foot-mouth disease. I'm noticing that some of his nails are now discolored, but our doctor told me that it has nothing to do with the virus. He says there's nothing we can do, but I've read that the virus can cause nail loss. Is there anything I can do, or will this just pass? And if so, in how long?"
Well, hand-foot-mouth disease is caused by a virus. I think it's a Coxsackie virus. I don't remember exactly what it is. Common among kids. What happens is that little bubbles, little lesions, we call them, in the mouth, on the hand, and often on the feet. I haven't looked recently to see if the nails have any effect at all. But if you read it on the net, hey, sometimes the net is right, sometimes it's wrong. Yeah. But on the whole, kids are not left with any residual problem. And even if the nails are affected, because the skin is affected clearly with this virus, it tends to get better. But nails take a long time to grow out. Fingernails take 3 months. Toenails take 6 months. And so when you're going to look for a normal nail, which will most likely return, because we don't see people with discolored nails from this virus, we don't see kids with it, it's going to be 6 months before you're going to see a difference. So my recommendation is hang on there. I bet the nails are going to be just hunky-dory.
Don't wait for your opportunity to pass. Send your show-stumping questions in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Stick around. Some interesting research to talk over. That's coming up next. Then more of your calls. And, of course, our medical myth buster before the hour is out. All here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. More of your questions for Zorba coming up, but first, we have an issue with yogurt, a recall of yogurt.
Right. Chobani yogurt, one of the most popular yogurts. It's a Greek yogurt. I've been like Greek yogurt. Do you eat Greek yogurt, Tom?
No, I eat other yogurt.
Other yogurt. Well, Greek yogurt has a little bit of a sour taste to it. It's not as sweet to me.
I like the yogurt that tastes like ice cream.
The yogurt that tastes like ice cream. Okay. Well, this is not quite within that.
Okay.
Anyway, there was a mold that was found in some of the products. The mold is not bad for you. On the other hand, they looked at it.
Well,
they said it's
yogurt,
not good.
Yogurt is mold.
Well, yogurt is mold, but this is the – well, yogurt is – yes, but it's not the right kind of mold. This is the wrong kind of mold. And the products, the way they really saw it, if you look at a yogurt container, it's flat, and it began to get bigger and bigger and kind of looked like it was puffing up. And I don't know if you remember, but when I was a kid, sometimes cans would sort of puff up.
Yeah.
And we knew that we had to throw away those cans because there was something growing in there.
If you remember that, then you know. No, I remember that.
There we go, exactly. So they recalled it because of these bloating, swelling containers. But I think it once again brings up the whole issue of food safety. Sprouts, there was an issue with sprouts. Sprouts can never be totally safe because they're a live product. Spinach, if you remember, there were a number of people who died from the spinach recall and had renal disease, kidney disease from that. E. coli in meat, salmonella, and chicken. These are, you know, food safety turns out to be a critically important issue.
Yeah. But back to the yogurt thing, this was not that serious a recall problem.
Right. I think the recall, well, there are a few issues that I think that were important about the recall. First of all, if you see a yogurt container that's bloated, don't eat it. That's number
one.
I mean, you order it, you look at it, you buy it in the store, and you see it's bloated. It doesn't look normal. Throw it away or bring it back to the store, more importantly, and say, hey, there's something wrong with this.
Yeah.
But secondly, I think from a quality point of view, when something like this happens, it's very important to say what's going on, look at the plant, say what's going on in the plant, and where was the food safety there. And that's the issue. There are lots of safety issues that occur in plants. You know, this affects Wisconsin because Wisconsin people eat lots of yogurt. Oscar Mayer products are made in Wisconsin, and they go through extensive food safety issues before they leave the plant.
If I'm listening in El Paso, what do I care about Wisconsin?
Well, you may be listening in El Paso. You care about Wisconsin if you love cheese and if you love yogurt.
Yeah.
I think the bottom line for this is if you see a container of anything and it looks funny, bring it back to the store. But then to protect your food safety, cook chicken to the right temperature, cook beef to the right temperature. Make sure you wash your lettuce. Make sure you wash your spinach because that's really the best safety. And make sure that anytime you cut vegetables, that you make sure they're on a safe, clean surface.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And Zorba, listener with us now in Lafayette, Indiana. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. What's up?
Well, I was just calling in to see if I could get a little guidance on treating a ruptured disc that I've had since January. Hmm. I've done everything I can as far as an uninsured person can afford, and I'm just sort of at a loss, and I'm kind of tired of dealing with it.
How'd you rupture it?
I think it was my skiing, or what you might call skiing, more like falling. But
more like falling than skiing.
It was a very icy day.
Yeah. You're a younger person?
26.
Yeah.
26.
Bummer not to have insurance, I gotta say.
It is, yeah. I've tried the cortisol shot. I've tried therapeutic massage. I can't really do bed rest. I work about 16 hours a day, you know, in and out. It kind of changes from there, but... I don't know if there's any other suggestion or any guidance.
I definitely have suggestions. First of all, how do you know you have a disc problem?
I saw a back doctor, actually, before I had the cortisol shot.
Uh-huh.
He was the one who recommended me to it.
So, and then did you have an imaging technique? Did you have an MRI?
I didn't. I had an X-ray, and at that point I was still trying to keep within budget.
Mm-hmm.
So they just said, let's try this and sort of figure it out from there.
Okay. Well, a couple of things. First of all, an X-ray doesn't tell whether or not you've got a slipped disc.
Right. They told me that.
Yeah,
they did.
They can look at the bones. And it's very interesting. If you look at people, we'll say 40 or 50 years of age, who have no back pain at all, 20% of them will have, quote, a slipped disc. So the presence of a slipped disc, for instance, doesn't mean that's even what's causing the pain. And frankly, we don't always know what causes the pain. But obviously, you slipped and fell. You've got back pain. That much we know. We know what causes it. And so the question is dealing with it. And I wouldn't go any further with any, by the way, imaging techniques or surgery or anything else at your age. I would do conservative things. So when you said you had a cortisone shot, was that in an X-ray suite or was that in the doctor's office?
It was in an X-ray suite. They had me under imaging and on a table and all of that.
Mm-hmm. So they did it by a CT scan? Is that what they did? They put you in? They were.
All I know was the bill.
All you know was the bill that was expensive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's probably, if it was a bill that was expensive, that was probably the case. Did you get any results from that at all?
Not a one. And I actually have a twin sister who had a similar diagnosis and had the cortisol shot, and she was great the next day, actually. This was a few months back. Yeah.
But you may not, and the reason that you may not have gotten any result at all is that it may not be from the disc.
Right.
In other words, the disc may not be the problem. If you didn't get any response at all, then that argues against a disc and says, what should we do about it? So, physical therapy. You've gone there. You've done back exercises.
I was given a pamphlet, and then I'm supposed to do these exercises at home on a daily basis.
Okay. So, number one, I would recommend either physical therapy or a therapist. Do back exercises. If you want something better than a pamphlet, go to YouTube. and look at back exercises on YouTube. Far better than any pamphlet
that
you'll see. Far better, free. Mm-hmm. Look at a bunch of exercises. You'll get a trend for what they are. In fact, if you go to ZorbaPastor.org, go to our website, we'll put a couple of YouTube back exercises that are good, both for the lower back and the middle back, right on our website, ZorbaPastor.org. We'll give you a YouTube link. So that's number one. Number two, you taking anti-inflammatories.
Ibuprofen. Mm-hmm.
How much Aleve are you taking?
I take about two a day.
I would up the dose. Okay. I would take two Aleve tablets twice a day for 2 months. That's what I would do. Day in and day out, two Aleve tablets twice a day for 2 months. Get down the inflammation in your back. Don't take it as needed. Take it every day. Do not take the subtherapeutic dose of one tablet twice a day, but take the therapeutic dose of two tablets twice a day. Those are the two things that I would do. Therapeutic massage, I think, tends to work. I mean, if it tends to work, it's going to work right away. If it doesn't, I don't think I would do it. Same for chiropractic. If it's going to work, I think it's going to work with one or two manipulations.
Right.
But I think you haven't really given exercise the full benefit it can have because, as you said, you have a pamphlet. You've been doing those exercises how many times a week?
I do them in the morning.
Okay.
Basically.
5 minutes, 10 minutes?
It probably takes about between five and ten.
Okay. So what I would do is I would double the exercise to morning and evening, do the right exercises that you look at on YouTube, take the anti-inflammatory for 2 months. Chances are this is going to greatly improve with that. The other thing is you may have a micro break in a bone when you fell that is not picked up by the CT. And sometimes these micro breaks, these very tiny bone bruises, as other will call it, can take up to 6 months or a year to heal. And I'm a skier. I love skiing. I've had pain from bones that I have bounced on, and it has taken me a year to improve. I have pain in my leg, pain in my back from it, and a year later I don't have pain, but it took a year to get better. So you're well within a healing period.
Good.
Don't give up conservative therapy. It's going to work.
All right. Well, that was actually very helpful because I was at my wit's end here.
Sounds great. Thank you so much, and thanks for listening.
Thank you, Dr. Zober. Have a good day.
You too. 800-462-7413. And Zorba, our medical myth buster is related to our last call, reducing pain. Apparently, a lot of doctors have begun to use music to help their patients with pain. We've heard that Mozart can make you smart, but can it now numb the nerves too?
And the answer is yes. There's no doubt about it that thinking about something else, listening to something else when you're having anything done in a painful way can ease the pain. And all you have to do is think about what dentists often do these days when they're working on your teeth. They're often giving you something to put in your iPod. And I don't think it matters what the music is. You know, frankly, if you're into rap and you're listening to Mozart, it's not going to numb your pain because you're going to say, what's this junk on my earphones? And if you like Mozart and you're listening to rap, it's going to be the same thing. There have been studies in the Journal of Pain. There was a study that showed that when people had painful shocks given to them, these are volunteers who were obviously college students who were paid the big bucks. When they listened to the music they liked, they weren't as bothered by the shocks. And I think that makes a difference. And then they got their $100. So yeah, that probably helped a lot too. Yeah. Maybe we should just pay people for pain. Let's forget the music. And let's say if you go to the dentist and we say, this is going to be painful. Here's $100. Maybe you'll complain less.
So just getting your mind
off it makes a difference. And so, I think that makes a difference. You've had pain in your life, haven't you?
Sure.
And, you know, you want to get your mind off of it. Yeah. When you're hurt, you know, you're bothered. Sometimes we watch TV or we listen to the public radio.
Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Absolutely. I don't think it's music. I think it's listening to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Every single week is very important to get rid of the pain in your life. That's my recommendation. The myth is it's music. The answer is it's my show.
Have a myth you'd like Zorba to put to music? Just send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. And Zorba, our next caller, is a listener in Windyville, Missouri. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, I'm 62 years old. I'm a retired high school art teacher, and I'm still teaching art in college 2 times a week. Mm-hmm. And I have not slept good for over a year, but it seems like this summer it's been even worse. I go to bed about 10:30, and then I'm awake off and on all night long. Mm-hmm. And I lay there and I wonder, what woke me up? Why am I laying here awake? Why won't my brain shut up? And I sometimes feel the hot flash thing. Well, at 62, you know, that thing happens. But I'll kick the covers off and I'll doze off and wake up. And I got a Tempur-Pedic bed. I thought that would help, and that's not helping. And I locked my kitties out of my bedroom, even though I miss hearing them purr. And I've done all this stuff, you know, taking natural drugs, melatonin, Valerian, B12. I've even taken some allergy medicine in desperation. And then my doctor told me to take some Flexeril, which I'm such a cheap date, I have to be sitting on the edge of the bed to take that stuff. And, so, you know, and I've tried all kinds of things. My dentist says I'm grinding my teeth at night. I'm not aware of that. I wondered if that's something that's waking me up. I know that I have a little bit of tension, and so sometimes I'll lay there before I go to sleep and say, okay, relax your toes, relax your ankles, relax your calves, you know, go all the way up. And then I'll be awake in the middle of the night and wonder, what the hell am I doing awake? I don't get it.
Do you think the hot flash thing you mentioned has anything to do with this?
I don't know. I know that I can be laying there fairly comfortable, and then I roll over, and then I'm sweaty. Whenever I roll over, I get all sweaty.
Got it. Got it. You're sweaty. You know, you just describe a truly awful situation where none of us want to be awake during the evening. And if we looked at it, you're probably dozing on and off because you definitely need sleep. You have to be sleeping, otherwise you go nuts.
Yeah, I can sleep in the car.
But yeah, not when you're driving. That would not be very good. That is not what you want to do. There was one Chevy Chase movie, and that's about the only time I remember anyone sleeping in the car driving. Let's go to a few things. Let's look at the stimulants you may have in your life, chemical stimulants. How much coffee do you drink, coffee, tea, any caffeinated products?
I drink coffee in the morning. Mm-hmm. I drink, you know, 2 or 3 cups of coffee in the morning. Then I don't drink any more caffeine drinks the rest of the day.
Okay, so no coffee after the morning time. You know, coffee can keep people awake at night, and some people are proud. Hey, I drink coffee at 6 o'clock in the evening or 10 o'clock at night, and I go to sleep because it's so common to keep people awake. Exercise? What kind of exercise do you?
Well, I call myself a farm woman, so I'm out there working quite a bit.
Okay.
I don't do regular exercise, but I decided that I wasn't getting enough exercise. Mm-hmm. So yesterday I went out in the barn. I've got an old television out there, and I put in Richard Simmons Sweating to the Old Week. And I did the whole thing, you know, and that didn't help me a bit.
Sweating to the Oldies in the Bar with Richard Simmons. That is funny. I have to tell you, I was going to Las Vegas to a meeting. It was about a year ago, and I'm in there in Las Vegas at McCarran Airport. What happens is there's a little train that takes you from the gate to pick up your luggage, and I'm on the train. I'm looking to the side, and there's this guy bouncing around, and I looked, and there's Richard Simmons, and he gets the whole car doing exercise for about 1 minute between the gate everywhere, and I got a picture with him, and I've shown that to more people, and they go, that's Richard Simmons. How did you get that photo? So getting back to the issue at hand, hot flashes can be an issue. You went through menopause when?
Very early. I had a total hysterectomy at 45.
So you've gone through menopause a long time ago.
Yeah.
When you first go through menopause, sometimes it's an issue, but for most women, they know if the hot flashes keep them awake because they say, it wakes me up. So there are two things that it can be. First of all, the overall question is whether or not you might have sleep apnea. That's an important issue. You could have sleep apnea and not know it. And for that, you've got to talk to your doc. You either get a screening study or a sleep study, because there are a lot of people who don't sleep well who have sleep apnea, and what they need is what's called a CPAP machine to sleep, and all of a sudden, my goodness, they sleep through the night. I can't tell from what you're telling me if you have it. You can really only tell, you know, by a test. So I would be checked for sleep apnea. That's number one. Number two, sometimes people need to take something to organize their sleep pattern so they begin to sleep well. And my recommendation is gabapentin, G-A-B-A-P-E-N-T-I-N. Gabapentin is a drug that we use for seizures, and it's a drug we use for chronic pain. And for many people, it's a non-narcotic habit-forming drug that can be very useful for sleep, and 300 milligrams at bedtime. And what I would do is I would take gabapentin, and I'd probably take it for 2 to 4 weeks to see if you could normalize your sleep pattern at bedtime.
Is that prescription?
Yes, it is. It's by prescription. Better than over-the-counter Benadryl, which gives many people a sort of hangover, dopey feeling.
Yeah, I tried that, and I feel really – I'm so dumb in the head in the morning from that.
It's a dopey feeling. I would take gabapentin. The second drug is a drug called trazodone, T-R-A-Z-O-D-O-N-E, 50 milligrams MG at bedtime. It's an antidepressant. Side effect is sleepiness. I would do that for a month, see what happens.
Okay.
And then I would just taper off the meds, take it every other night, and then quit it.
Are those habit-forming?
No, they are not. Neither of them are habit-forming, but either drug, if you take any drug to go to sleep, when you stop taking it for a night or two, your sleep is a little disruptive. But they're not habit-forming. But getting back to the first issue, you should have a sleep apnea screening to see if you have sleep apnea, because if so, the CPAP machine is very good, and sleep apnea carries with a risk of stroke if you actually have it. So I would recommend getting a sleep apnea study.
Okay, I can do that.
In your case, so.
Okay.
Good luck. Call us up one day when you're awake and let us know what's going on. And do not sleep when driving.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so
Thanks
much for
the call.
800-462-7413, toll free. 1-800-462-7413. And before we step away for another week, Zorba, let's go to our inbox for a helpful listener tip from Ellen in Buffalo, New York, who's hoping to steer us in the right direction. She writes, "Hi, Zorba. I am a psychology professor, and I heard your suggestions on motion sickness and have some chemical-free suggestions. We get motion sickness because our perceptions do not match our actions. That's why we don't get it when we are driving. So, one, never look out the side window. Stay as close to the middle as you can. And two, pretend that you are driving. You can actually move your hands on an imaginary steering wheel, or just steadily watch the driver's hands if you have other passengers who might think that pretend steering is weird. It takes some concentration, but it has always worked for me."
I think that pretend
Isn't that
steering
great?
Is weird, but I think it's a great idea. So I know this is what I'm going to do, because sometimes one of my daughters will get sick. We're driving in the car in the back seat. I'm going to get a kid's steering wheel in the back seat.
Good
so she
idea.
Can have a kid's steering wheel with a little horn in the middle. Remember, honk, honk, and that little horn in the middle. And then she can go and steer herself down the road while I'm steering
this
the car.
This is a daughter who's, what, 23 years old?
No, 28 years
28
old.
28 years old.
28 years old, not 23.
With a little
when we're
kid
doing
steering
something, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. Hey, you know, that's my daddy's side.
If you're moved to share some healthy living advice, just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. The show was produced by Tom Witter with help from Gabrielle Padriani. Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, begging for your attention on our next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0914Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.